from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And it's Locked On Chiefs. We are past midweek. Kind of a strange week. Hope you guys had a great Christmas. It's Thursday's show, which means our buddy Seth Kaiser's on from Arrowhead Pride, and we're going to get to him in a little bit. But first, I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics and your host here, as well as I'm Locked On Chiefs and a writer over at ChiefsDigest.com.
And I am Chris Clark. I am a staff writer at Arrowhead Addict, and I am the editor of LockedOnChiefs.com, and I am the other host. And we are here to talk to you today about the big news that Kansas City dropped at Andy Reid's press conference.
And it looks like they got a lot of information to talk to the players as well. But what everybody was hoping was going to happen is happening, folks. At Denver, you're going to see backups, a lot of them, it sounds like. And, you know, I wonder who folks are most keen to see.
Jehu Chesson, right?
Yeah, it must be, right?
Oh, no, maybe it's K-Pass. Maybe they think that K-Pass is going to show out as
well,
a starter.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm looking forward to him. But
yeah, but
tell me your impression. It looked like the quarterbacks were ready to go. Very obvious that Alex is going to help Pat Mahomes study for his first start in the NFL.
Yeah, and Reed even went as far as saying that Alex was going to be the scout team guy this week, which I think is interesting. But obviously, Alex Smith knows this team inside and out. He knows Denver pretty well, and he's going to help Pat get ready for this game. And Patrick is pretty excited to start, as he should be. And it sounds like his entire family is going to be going to Denver to watch him.
Yeah, I think he had plans with his mom already, according to a report that I saw. And my big takeaway, and I put this on Twitter, if the big thing for me is that they made the wholesale change. They're not just going to sprinkle him in during the week. You know, this is his week. He is taking the number one reps, which means Alex isn't going to get reps with the ones. He's going to run the scout, and that's great. But Patrick's going to get all the reps with the ones, and that's the important thing. That's a normal week for an NFL quarterback. And not only does it set him up for what his practice week will be like in 2018, but it also gets him used to using his quarterback room as a team. I mean, think of it as an iceberg. The starting quarterback is the guy that you see that sticks out of the water, but all week long they're watching film together. They're bouncing ideas off of each other. They're using the room as a whole. You see the other two quarterbacks that are underneath the surface like an iceberg. You can't really see them, but they're contributing to what the guy does on the field on game day, and I think that's really significant for him.
Well, and if you remember, and maybe, you know, there's a lot of people that have talked about this, and I'm not exactly sure where I saw it, but Peyton Manning talked about, and Trevor Siemian talked about actually after Manning left, that he got so used to being the guy that was behind Manning that got assignments from Peyton Manning for starting. It was one of those things that, you know, that's kind of how the quarterback system can be used. Now, I don't know that Kansas City uses it that way, but I would assume that you're going to have, you know, Tyler Bray and Alex Smith looking at different aspects and Mahomes looking at specific things and maybe Smith giving Mahomes more ideas as to what to look at, although I'm sure Pat's been paying attention for the first, you know, 16 weeks of the season.
Sure, sure. I think the big thing for me is it sets him up to know the process, to be able to lead that room next year without Alex Smith in the room any longer. Yeah, they're probably going to have to add somebody a little bit more of a veteran type. Unless they decide to part ways with Tyler Bray as well, but it gets him used to running the room, running practices, doing all the things that he'll have to do when he is the starter in 2018. I think that's key for this week.
Yeah, but it also gets him going with players that he generally won't be playing with. And this, you know, he's not going to be playing with the starters, so that's going to be a change. You know, Matt Derrick actually said on Twitter that it sounds like LDT is not going to play. It sounds like that it's possible that Parker Ehinger is going to start in his place. So you have to wonder who's going to start on the offensive line. And obviously you don't think that, you know, Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce are going to be playing.
No. Going to be a big day for DeMarcus, especially we know he has a connection with Pat Mahomes. I think he tweeted at him about 30 seconds after he became the chief. They obviously have a rapport, and that's built, and that's good to see. Want to see that in action. Ehinger's one of the guys that I am supremely keen to see where he's at. And if it's all boiled down to between the lack of a full rookie season and his injury, if it's led to him just not being up to par with Brian Witzman, I don't buy it, but we're going to see where he is, it sounds like, on Sunday.
Well, it also sounds like there's going to be a little bit of an argument going on between Andy Reid and maybe Mitchell Schwartz as well.
Right.
Which, you know, and I say that and, you know, people kind of may laugh at that. But at the same time, you know, I think there is a little validity to that because Mitchell Schwartz wants to play.
Yeah, he's got a consecutive snap streak going that he does not want to miss out on.
Yeah. And that's important to linemen. Linemen take pride in the fact that they play every snap. So, you know, I honestly, you know, you kind of tweeted about this earlier during the day. I personally would like to see Schwartz playing because you really want to have a new guy or Cameron Irving blocking for Pat Mahomes with Von Miller on the other sideline. I really don't.
Well, and that's the key for me is if it all depends on how long the Broncos are going to run their guys. Because Shaq Barrett's pretty quick, too. He's going to give some guys some trouble, too. And if Cam Irving's out there playing for Fisher on the other side, that's definitely a question mark because while Barrett's a young guy, definitely not the Shane Ray, not the Von Miller, but very quick in his own right, he's going to give Irving some fits.
Well, I would be surprised if Mitchell Schwartz doesn't play, but Andy Reid has said that it's possible that he won't. So we will see once we get down to that point in the game, or we will see once we get to that point who's going to play. And, you know, Reid didn't specify who is going to be inactive. So it's possible that, you know, Alex Smith is going to be inactive, which would mean that Tyler Bray is your backup quarterback, which is a little bit different as well.
Yeah. But, you know, something that this one game, I think, is perfectly fine. The Chiefs are not at risk in this contest. Their matchup is pretty much locked up. It all depends on the other team. So what we do have for you coming right now is probably our longest episode of the season with Seth. We got into so many topics that, you know, quite frankly, Chris just couldn't stop asking more questions. So we just ran really, really long. Together with this segment, we're going to be about an hour. So hope you all have some time. Enjoy your commute. And here's our talk with Seth. All right, so let's get down to it. Seth's back. Say hello, Seth.
Hello.
You know him from Arrowhead Pride. He's on with us every week. And if you just tuned into the show, where have you been? But what we're going to do is talk about some bigger things this week, not necessarily all the film, although we are going to cover your topic of the week here in a little bit. But I want to start with something that didn't actually happen, and that is maybe a late season addition that could have helped this team going into the postseason. And I'm a little surprised that they didn't do something about it, and that's the James Harrison situation. What is your take on what you would have liked to have seen them do?
I would have loved for them to have brought James Harrison into the mix. I've had a lot of people say a lot of things about him, that he must be washed, and, you know, there's a reason the Steelers weren't playing him. But we saw in week 6 that in 15 snaps, he can still collect a sack, a hit, and a pressure. He just destroyed Fisher. And so they needed help rushing the passer from that side. And Harrison has shown in limited snaps that he can still do that. And additionally, if you sign him, you keep a guy who is proven to own our left tackle. He absolutely owns Eric Fisher. You keep a guy like that from going to New England, where everyone knew he was going. As soon as he cleared the waiver wire, everyone knew that's where he was going. And so you can...
Yeah, that's the thing. If you keep him from your opponent, you're likely to see.
Absolutely. And then also, I mean, Harrison's a real sharp guy from everything I've heard regarding as a defensive mind. Be a good opportunity to pick his brain regarding, you know, the things that Pittsburgh has been doing against the Chiefs. I mean, I don't get this one at all. I understand that there's no guarantee he's necessarily an upgrade. But, I mean, it's not like – I mean, Holly's done okay since he's come back, but he hasn't been that great. Passanio, I think, is a year away. He's flashed a little bit, nothing too crazy. Zombo is what he is. You could use a guy to at least throw into the rotation – who's strong against the run and as a pass rusher from what we've seen, and at least see if he could be a little bit better, because those little improvements, those 5% improvements, those matter. Those are a big deal. So I don't get this. I don't like it at all. It was very little money, no risk. Why not do it?
Well, and what I don't get is why nobody claimed him.
Right.
That's what shocked me. I figured somebody was going to claim him, you know, whether or not it's Kansas City, you know, and I think that they should have claimed him. I think that that would have been a good move for them to do. But regardless of that, why did nobody claim him?
And that's what it brings me back to me. And I talked about this a little yesterday, is you just got to wonder if his attitude, if his way about him is just not something that teams feel is cohesive to their locker rooms. It's one thing for him to be who he is in Pittsburgh because he's been there for so long. But outside of that locker room, is he somebody that can fit in with another group of players?
And that might be very true. He's obviously been like the alpha dog guy for a decade. There's a question, does he come into the locker room and fall into line behind Justin Houston? Does he? You know what I mean? That's a good question. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, with just a few games left, when he's got an opportunity to face his, you know, his former team, if they do well enough, I feel like that's what's really motivating him right now. He's already, you know, he's already won a couple Super Bowls. I think for him, this has got to be like a, I want to play Pittsburgh. And you know he's going to have a monster game against Pittsburgh. I would bet a lot on that.
Well, and I wonder if the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't do what they set out to do, knowing that they needed to let him go, and they did it at a time right at the holiday that put teams kind of off kilter, that they weren't able to take advantage of it, or they didn't have the personnel to do the analysis to get a decision made. And I wonder if that's something that maybe Brett Veach's, you know, relatively new position for him, maybe he was caught off guard as well. And maybe that's simply why this didn't happen.
It could be.
Well, and that's possible. Well, I was just going to say that's possible. But regardless of that, you let him go to a team like the Patriots. You know, I don't know why the Steelers would think that the Patriots wouldn't pick him up. I wouldn't want him on a team like that that you're going to be facing again more than that you could be facing again in the playoffs.
It just feels oddly strategic by the Steelers. Obviously, they knew there was a big chance because, you know, the reason he went through the waiver wire for like 23 or 24 different teams is because a non-playoff contender has no reason to sign him. There's no reason, right? They can play their guys in week 17 and it's just not going to matter. They get some tape on their young guys, right? A rental like Harrison doesn't matter to those guys. Who he matters to are the playoff contenders. And they had to have known that there was a risk that the Ravens or the Chiefs or the Patriots pick him up, especially those three teams. And they must not be concerned with his knowledge of the Steelers' defense, which tells me, you know, it's almost like they're like, well, we've got this plan to switch things up a bit, so might as well send him so we can feed him a bunch of crap information, you know?
It could be.
It's interesting, though, that they made a push to re-sign him, and then they didn't play him at all this year. I didn't hear anything about him not being healthy.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was with all of this. It's just genuinely bizarre. It was kind of bizarre that no one claimed him at all. Like, even among the playoff contenders, you really would think one team would claim him. But for whatever reason, no one did. I think you do see that the NFL really is just so notoriously conservative. I mean, they really are. I really do feel like the analysis you see from a lot of locker rooms or a lot of GMs is, well, they wouldn't have released him unless they had a reason. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like coming from a position of fear. That's really what it feels like with this, is like some assumption that he's done, when I don't think he is. I think the Chiefs could have really used him. I was very bummed by how that turned out. Not that he's a world beater, but he seems like he's got enough juice in him for a few games, and that's all they need right now.
Exactly. Just get over the hump.
Not only does he have a little bit of juice for the playoffs, but, you know, him going to New England is worse for Kansas City because we've seen what he's done to Eric Fisher in the past couple of seasons.
Right.
It hasn't been pretty. So That's not a good look for Kansas City right now, because if they end up facing New England, you know he's going to be motivated and he's going to be going up against a guy that he's had his way with at times.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a really bad look for the team if they go to New England and Harrison has – if he makes any impact, it's going to be a bad look for the team.
Well, and it's got to be fairly likely if they see him again. Look at his stats from 2017. He played in 5 games. The only game he recorded any stats at all were against the Chiefs. So it's difficult to see any reason that something good could come out of
that. That almost sounded like a painful laugh, Seth.
Oh, it's a frightened laugh.
Well, there's a lot before they have to face those Patriots. And I know one thing you're looking at is how this passing game is going to help them get there.
Right.
And there's somebody in particular you're focusing on, isn't there?
Yes. Right now I'm doing some research and some film study and statistical review of Tyreek Hill. Basically taking a look at him, I was thinking after the Dolphins game about the fact that Alex a few times just threw it up there for him. Like the way we've all been saying, man, why don't you just throw it up at least several times a game to Tyreek, right? Well, Alex did it, you know, and it worked out pretty well. He had that really great toe tap on the right sideline on a deep ball. He had a nice deep ball up the middle. He made that fantastic grab in the end zone that, I mean, that's been beaten to death. I mean, I cannot believe that was
not. Oh, let's beat it some more.
I cannot believe that didn't get ruled as a catch. I slowed down the coach's film view, and I was like, how did this not get overturned? How did the ref.
You start to wonder.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Well, the ref was standing right there. How did he get that wrong?
I don't understand why there can't be GoPros strapped to the goalposts looking at the corners of the end zone. I mean, there's so much technology available. They should be able to film every inch of every end line, sideline, and goal line.
Right, to where you could have it zoom. And yeah, the camera technology is there for that easily. And so then you can gauge it in separate parts, right? You can watch, okay, did the ball come out? No, not once during the whole play. So then we need to just look at the sideline to see if his feet came down because we already know the ball didn't move. And it just seems like so simple, but yet they don't do it. And plus there was a suspiciously few, there was not very many views of like very, very many viewpoints for the end zone, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they kept showing the two same views over and over, and I was like, they still make it look like a catch, but it's not going to be enough to overturn it. And that's what they said. There wasn't enough to overturn for that left foot. And then finally, like a fan released a video on Twitter that was a way better view than anything else, and it looks like a catch. You look at the coach's film, it looks like a catch. I just, the whole thing makes me sick. It was just gross.
Well, they talked about... They talked about what is a catch after in the NFL Today on Channel 12 after the game. And they were talking about actually the Kelvin Benjamin play. I don't know if you guys saw that or not.
Yeah.
That was a catch too. Right. He had both of his feet down. And, you know, one of the things they talked about, and I think it's really something that needs to be looked at, and I think you're right in this regard, I think they're starting to look at catches and looking at too much. You know, you said something about them being able to go and look at, okay, does he have the ball? Okay, so we don't need to look at that or his feet in. I think it might be the other direction. I think they're looking at it and they're doing that, and that's what's causing all these issues with what is a catch and what is not a catch, because the Kelvin Benjamin catch, he had the ball. He moved it to his other arm. He never lost possession of that ball.
Right.
That was a catch.
Well, I think what's happening is we're trying to apply an objective standard to something that is necessarily a subjective thing. Catching a ball. What does it mean to catch a ball? You cannot pin down this objective view. And what they keep doing is they keep narrowing farther and farther what a catch is. And the problem is it's not making the game better. It's taking away miraculous catches. Someone tweeted kind of humorously, you know, NFL has ruled that David Tyree's helmet catch wasn't a catch and the Patriots win Super Bowl, whatever. But I mean, at the end of the day, you wonder if we went back and reviewed that under the way they're doing things now, would that helmet catch be a catch? I don't know.
Not if Al Riveron is the one reviewing it, no.
Well, yeah, and that's – I mean, the whole thing – and too much is dependent on what the call on the field is. I think the catch rule should be it's just reviewed. It doesn't need to be overturned. It doesn't need to be upheld. None of that stuff, right? Just reviewed. Just a straight up, was it a catch or not? You know what I mean? I don't like, because there are a lot of, I understand the reason for the call on the field carrying some weight. That makes sense. Sure. That makes sense. But I think for this specific purpose with something that has so much nuance, I think a lot of these plays, the problem is that the original call is wrong. Now, to be fair, the one that happened to the Pittsburgh guy last week, they got the original call right there, I think. And then they still overturned it. So, I mean, who knows? But they really should just be, is it a catch? Did he catch the ball? Yeah, he caught the ball. I mean, this isn't – this.
I think the core problem is if you can set up a communication line between the guys on the field that made the initial call and the guy in the booth, I think that straightens out quite a bit of it.
That too.
Bowl season is here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for payout? Sign up at mybookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on, and if you want to make money betting on the bowl games, you got to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I'd recommend. We trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. Go check them out for yourself. They have odds on every matchup as well as in-game live betting on all this season's NFL and bowl games.
And join right now while bowl games are going on, and MyBookie will match your deposit up to 50% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. I want to ask you both your opinion on a different aspect of it, and that is that these are both, yes, explosive, but relatively young receivers. And if they are more the, elder statesmen, the experienced receivers, the elite receivers, do they get that call either on the field or in the replay because of their status as one of those elite players?
That could well happen. I could see it. You know, it's tough to not let that kind of thing, you know, have some kind of sway. I wouldn't surprise me. It just, what really frustrated me about that, to be honest, is that it would have gone down as one of the best toe tap catches of the year. And Hill had already made a fantastic toe tapper earlier in the game. But this one was like special, right? I mean, just unbelievable, the body control there. And to me, a lot of the times with wide receivers, it's a moment like that when people start to say, wait a minute, this guy's one of the best. You know, Odell Beckham, he was already playing incredibly well when he made that catch over Brandon Carr, right? But that's what had people stand up and take notice. And so what frustrated me is that I still have to sit here and listen to people talk about Tyreek Hill like he's not a great wide receiver when I think he already is. And that's what my research has been on with this next article. I'm taking a look at him statistically.
And so what are you basing that on?
Well,
Yeah.
I'm looking at it from a statistical.
Does it start with the stats?
It starts with the stats, you know, I mean, because otherwise you're just comparing traits. And now there's more value in that in the end of the day. But the first thing I wanted to do was clear up the stats argument just so he could at least get in the conversation, right? Well, so what I did was, you know, Hill is sixth in the league in yards receiving right now. Which that alone, in my opinion, should be high enough up there to have people willing to say, okay, let's give this guy a conversation, right? Because
Well, even before you go there, can I ask you this? Because in my head, a 1,000-yard receiver is an elite receiver. I mean, that's a marginal point to begin the conversation.
Maybe to an extent. The problem is in today's NFL, 1,000 yards receiving ain't quite what it used to be. I would say at least you have too many guys that are able to achieve that every year.
Ryan, you can go back to your smash mouth football, and that would be an elite receiver. But unfortunately, I think Seth is right in this.
See, like,
I'll be back here in 1984.
So, like, looking right now we've got 18 receivers that are over 900 yards. So within pretty good distance of 1,000, you got 13 that are already above 1,000. To me, 13 receivers is too many to call a guy elite. You know what I mean? Like, and it all depends on what your definition of elite is, right? To me, elite at the wide receiver position, like at the quarterback position, that means you're one of the best two or three because it's a numbers game, right? A percentage game. How rare are you? For me, wide receivers, to be elite, you got to be one of the best five, six, seven receivers in the game. So that, you know, and I started off with that saying, this is how I define elite. And so what I did was I took a look. So Hill is sixth in yards, right? He's got five guys ahead of him. And so where a lot of people would say is, oh, those guys are better. And then just full stop, right? Well, what I did is whenever I look at statistics, I don't like looking at just the basic statistics like yards, because something like total yards is wildly impacted by how many targets a guy gets, because it's well known that the Chiefs really should be targeting Hill more than they are. And lately they have been, and his production started to go up. But that's one if you look at DeAndre Hopkins, he has 176 targets this year. You know how many Tyreek Hill has? 105. He has 71 fewer targets than DeAndre Hopkins and only about a little under 200 fewer yards.
And part of that is because of Travis Kelce. If you take Travis Kelce off this team, Hill becomes a guy that you're throwing the ball to more. And what you're saying is by having more weapons, you're spreading the ball around more, which means less targets for somebody like Hill.
To an extent, for me, actually, it's been more of the function of the way the offense runs and the way Alex Smith works. Alex Smith is not going to force the ball to anyone. Now, he's started to a little more to Kelce, and you've seen that especially this year and last year. It's been a little more like Kelsey's my go-to guy. And I think, I could be wrong, I think we're starting to see it with Hill now too. Like more of like a
he's I was going to say, on that deep throw?
Yeah.
On that 50-yard throw, you don't think he forced it?
I would
triple
call,
coverage?
Well, like I said, we're starting to see it. Well, and for one, I would say you're talking about the middle of the field. The middle of the field
that's
throw
fair.
To the Dolphins.
Yep.
Because, you know, the announcer called it triple coverage, and that's not what was going on there. I mean, you had zone coverage where guys converged on the play. I mean, so you had a safety over the top, you had a corner that was in trail, and then a corner that came from the other side of the field. And so I actually cringed when the announcer said triple coverage, because those are the kinds of things that people hear and they're like, they're putting three guys on Hill. It's like, well, no, that's not what happened there. That to me, that wasn't forced to him because he was open. He was very open, and there was a ton of field to throw it to. He actually looked less open than it was, and look, it was a tough throw, right? 50 yards down the field, so I'm not like calling it a bad throw, but it wasn't like a great throw that was out in front of him more. He puts it out in front of him a little more. I think that's probably six. And I think Alex is still, even today, it's just like, God, I could never overthrow this guy. So I wouldn't call that forcing it to him. I would call a lot more that like 30 or 40 yarder down the right sideline. That was more forcing it to him. Alex was about to take a hit and he threw it, and Hill didn't have a step on the guy. I don't know who that corner was, but he was actually going stride for stride with Hill. Then Hill started to pull away by like a half step. Then he looked up, and despite the fact that he had a corner in his pocket, he saw the ball coming, adjusted, as the corner stumbled forward, made a great jumping catch, toe tapped for a big gain. So anyway, Alex is starting to target him a bit more, but you've got to look at yards per target. Like Pro Football Focus is really proud of their yards per route run stat. But the problem is that still has the same flaw in that a guy who gets targeted all the time, like an Antonio Brown, who has 162 targets this year, that guy has an inherent advantage, right, in yards per route run or anything like that. So what I was looking at was yards per target, because that tells me how many yards do you get when you throw to this guy? How many yards on average do you get? just by throwing to him.
See, and that's why I favor yards per completion for quarterbacks in the same way, because I want to know what you're actually accomplishing when you do connect.
Absolutely. And that's why, like, air yards per throw and stuff is so important for a quarterback too, because it's really like, what are you doing every time you throw the ball, right? Don't tell me even about, yeah, how many yards per attempt, because that can be messed with by a high completion percentage. So you're absolutely right. And so what I'm trying to do is take the statistics, because basic statistics, they don't tell you a ton because there's so much context there. And so what I try to do is narrow it down a little till we learn more. So I look at yards per target. I take a look at touchdowns per target. I take a look at 40 plus yard plays. Like, how often does that occur? Like, how many targets per 40 yard play? What their catch percentage is. Like, how many catches do you get every time you're targeted? Do you get a catch, like every target is, 0.6 to get a catch? Are you 60% likely? Are you 50%? You know what I mean? So these are the things I wanted to get a little more in depth. So what I did is I took the top 12 receivers, wide receivers in the game. So, cause I left out Gronkowski and Travis Kelce, because they're in the top 10 of receiving yards, but they play a different position. Tight end is a totally different analysis because their targets are different.
Sure.
So I took the top 12 receivers. So you got Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, Adam Thielen, Tyreek Hill, Michael Thomas, Larry Fitzgerald, AJ Green, Marvin Jones, and T.Y. Hilton, right? Those are the guys that I was looking at. Not T.Y. Hilton. I'm sorry. Brandon Cooks is who I looked at, which I thought Cooks was a good comparison because he gets compared to him a lot. And I think I also did T.Y. Hilton, if I'm remembering correctly, because Hilton's a guy Hill gets compared to sometimes. And so how many of them do you think out-earned Hill on a per-target basis?
Three.
Zero.
Two.
Okay.
Zero. Not one of them. And the funny thing is, most of them weren't even close. Really? Not even close. Not even close. I don't have my sheet in front of me, of course, where I was jotting stuff down. But we're talking like he averages a full, I think it was 3 yards per target more than Antonio Brown. He averages a couple yards more than Julio Jones and Keenan Allen. He's ahead of Marvin Jones, who's like another deep threat type. He's way ahead of Brandon Cooks. He's ahead of T.Y. Hilton. He is ahead of all of them, and it's not really close.
What's the average number of targets for most of those guys?
It varies. So like I'm looking at it right now. So Brown and Hopkins are above everyone else. Hopkins is 176. Brown is 162. Julio Jones is 137. Keenan Allen is 147. Thielen is 136. So what you see generally with like a number one wide receiver type, somewhere between 130 and 140 or 150, about there. And Tyreek Hill's walking around at 105. If Tyreek Hill had the same numbers, this is one thing I did. If Tyreek Hill had the same number of targets as Antonio Brown and he was 90% as efficient, 90%, right? He would have
as efficient as he has been,
right? If he was 90% as efficient as he has been, he would still have 200 more yards and another touchdown compared to what Brown has. And that's again, if you take away some of his efficiency. Also, so like other deep threat type guys, they have a 40 plus yard play every, like some of them don't have any. Some of them have a few, like, you get some with Julio Jones, he'll have one like every 30 targets or so. He'll have a 40 plus yard play. With Tyreek, it's like every 14 targets. It's just unbelievable. And that's part of what leads to his efficiency, right? But here's the other thing that sets him apart. This is why he's so efficient. Not only does he have more explosive plays, but his catch rate is higher than other receivers. The only receiver, there was only one, and for the life of me, I wish I could figure out who. Because then by catch rate, you look at catches compared to targets. How many guys are hauling in most of the stuff? Now, to be fair, Alex Smith is a pretty accurate thrower, so that helps. But I mean, you know, you got guys like Keenan Allen and Julio Jones and Antonio Brown and Michael Thomas. These guys have accurate throwers throwing to them. Brandon Cooks. Tyreek not only has more explosive plays, but he catches a higher percentage of the throws thrown his way. And so what that tells me is that he is able to do the deep shots as well as the short, easy game, right? And that's what differentiates him from like a Marvin Jones. Because Marvin Jones is a great deep threat in Detroit. He's having a good season, but he can't do the things that Hill can do, right? He can't run the quick curls and outs and ins and slants, whereas Hill is doing that. So he's picking up the high percentage stuff and the deep shots. And so literally, at this point, I'm looking for a receiver that comes close to him in yards per target, and I'm not finding one. Not one. Like, that's why I actually expanded it. I was initially just doing like the top like eight. I've expanded it because I'm looking for someone who's as efficient. I'm not finding anyone. Like, no one's even close. The closest guy that I got was Cooks, and he was a full yard and a half below him. And that's with Tom Brady throwing to him. You know, people talk about Mike Evans. Mike Evans has like 250 fewer yards on 15 more targets. Robbie Anderson, who often gets compared to Hill, the guy with the Jets, and man, he looks good. He's got more targets and only 939 yards on 6 more targets. No one is close to him. It's not even a contest. And so so you start with that, and the first thing you find out is statistically speaking, he is literally the most efficient wide receiver in the NFL. Now, yards per target is not a perfect stat, so it's not going to be all-encompassing, but that's incredible. And so...
just the fact that it's there, and that we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs having a receiver that's in the conversation at the top of his profession.
Absolutely. Well,
but to back up a second, that's not what's incredible to me the most. What's incredible to me the most is... this is really his first year playing wide receiver ever.
Yes.
Full wide receiver ever.
Yes.
I mean, 2 years ago, he was a running back. Now, don't get me wrong. He was running routes out of the backfield. But, yeah, it's just a completely different position. For him to do what he's doing now is amazing. And
it's
we're in for a treat moving forward.
It's unprecedented. Let me give you guys one final thing. And, you know, a big part for anyone who's listening, you know, I think the article – is out by now by the time you guys are listening to this. So I'm going to be doing a lot of film analysis. So that's the thing I'm going to talk about too is, and we've talked about this before, right? He's not just really fast. He's also very quick. His route running isn't perfect, but it's improved and it's actually pretty good at this point. And he high points the ball well. He adjusts to the ball well. He's tougher to bring down than you'd think. He has several elite skills and he's well-rounded everywhere else. There's nothing he's bad at as a receiver.
His ball adjustment is amazing.
His ball adjustment is some of the best in the NFL. And you combine that, his ability to track and adjust to the deep ball, or any ball, right? It doesn't just have to be deep. We saw that his body control is great. He has elite body control on the sideline. He has elite tracking skills, and he has elite speed. Those are three incredibly important things. He does not have elite quickness, but it's very, very close. He's not – his quickness –
and you have – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, his quickness isn't quite as blow you away because his routes aren't perfect, but his routes are decent. And the thing is, he looks quicker on his routes than he did a year ago. I'm telling you, the ceiling has not been reached here.
No, and Andy Reid – and I can't remember where I saw this. I did read it. Andy Reid actually was asked what Tyreek Hill needs to work on for next year, and – you know, him and Tyreek both have the same answer, route running.
Yep. And that's the scary thing is he seems to have a – I was curious once he saw some success what he'd be like. But he – you the amount of improvement I've seen in his route running, that speaks to work. Like, you know, I was worried about Kelce after he had success initially. But you watched his route running refine. You watched his ball security refine. And it seems like he's a guy who's willing to put in the work. Here's one final tidbit. I know we're going to go over like we always do. So the comparison that a lot of people have made because he's a shorter receiver is Steve Smith, right? That's who a lot of people say, you know, hopefully he can be Steve Smith rather than Tavon Austin or Dexter McCluster, right? That was like the ceiling. Here's the deal. We're 15 games in, right? So not a full season. In 15 games, Hill's season this year is statistically better than all but three of Steve Smith's seasons. And that's that again. That is really saying something. He actually has an outside shot at being better than one of them, but it would require a really big game from him. And the first big
season, won't get a chance to do.
No, he
until
won't.
The playoffs.
No, I think they'll sit him. They have to sit the indispensable guys. They do. And, I mean, you cannot. Hill getting hurt is a disaster. Kelsey getting hurt is a disaster.
You bring up indispensable. I think that segues into the next subject. Who is indispensable in your opinion?
On offense, Hill and Kelsey, Alex. You know, the offensive line, it's a bit of a different animal because you can't sit everyone and you're almost better off having guys in there that are familiar with one another because you got, I think you're less likely to have a roll up or something like that. And so maybe if there's a guy who's not feeling well or a guy who's been nicked up, sit him. But other than that, I think you keep the offensive line in there. As far as the rest.
What about Hunt?
Oh yeah, Kareem Hunt. I knew I was forgetting someone obvious. Yes, you have to sit Kareem, which is so unfortunate because he's got a shot at the rushing title, and that would solidify Rookie of the Year for him, and he deserves Rookie of the Year. But
yeah, I agree.
This could cost him that accolade. Isn't it Gurley?
Gurley isn't a rookie.
Isn't he just behind Gurley?
By like 13 yards, yeah.
No, I know he's not a rookie. You said rushing title.
Yeah, he's just behind Gurley.
And Gurley's sitting this week.
Yeah, and so but here's the thing. Hunt, Hill, and Kelsey especially, those guys are indispensable. That is the best running back, wide receiver, tight end combination in the league. And even if Antonio Brown were healthy, still is. Because Travis Kelce is so much better than whatever tight end the Steelers are throwing out there. It is the best trio like that in the league. And you can't let them get hurt. You just can't. Because especially even with Hill's development, Kelce getting hurt especially is a disaster. And so I think you keep the offensive line in because unless someone's nicked up, because I don't like the idea of guys who haven't played together all year and they don't have five backup offensive linemen, right? So you keep the linemen in. Yeah.
So flip it to the other side. Who else are you sitting?
I think you sit Houston for sure. I think you sit Marcus Peters for sure. Probably sit Darrell Revis. Probably sit Tamba. Probably sit DJ. Trying to think if I'm missing anyone here. Maybe Ron Parker.
That was the one I was thinking you were missing.
Yeah, I think you
said. Personally, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think everyone else. I mean, well, Chris Jones, you at least consider it. But he's been healthy throughout his career. But, you know, Chris Jones getting hurt is a big deal. Like, he's your only defensive lineman capable of taking over a game. I could see them sitting him and Benny Logan.
Yet he's still not starting over R&R.
And I don't know how much starting really means. I don't know what the snap ratio is though.
No, that's a fair point. I was very surprised. I will say, looking back at the snaps for this week, I was very surprised to see Houston and Houston especially playing 100% snaps.
Yeah, I'm surprised they did that down the stretch, but I think Houston's feeling fine. I'm just excited to get into the playoffs with a healthy Justin Houston. I think it'd be good for him to get a week of rest. Obviously, Houston's a guy who doesn't need he doesn't need the reps to stay sharp. You know, he's fine. And right. So I think you.
And the more reps you get K-Pass, the better off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so I that's on defense. Yeah, Houston, Khalid, DJ, Peters, because Houston and Peters are the two guys to where if they get hurt, it's a disaster. Although, I mean, to be fair, they played one of their best defensive games of the year without Peters, so what do I know? now, but to be fair, since Peters came back, he's a turnover-causing machine, so, and he's a guy who can swing a game.
Most definitely.
And so, and then I would say maybe Parker as well, depending on how he's feeling. Parker's been consistently healthy throughout his career, though. And honestly, given how that those safeties have been tackling lately, I don't know if you sit them. It's like, look, guys, you need to show me you can freaking tackle. The one, that's the thing that's going to haunt me this year, because even though they're going to the playoffs healthier than they've ever been, what's going to haunt me is the Eric Berry thing. What would this defensive ceiling be with Berry? And that's just going to bug the crap out of me. But, you know, that, so
by the way, Chris Jones played 60. Chris Jones played 60% of the snaps. R&R played 26 on against the Dolphins.
Right. That sounds about right to me. R&R is more of a rotational guy. Jones is your guy. Jones is he's the guy who's capable of helping take over a game. And so I think maybe you rest him too, depending on how he's feeling. And so then you just go into it like that. But the offensive line is where I keep going back and forth, but I don't like the idea of sitting a few offensive linemen. Does that make sense? It feels more likely that someone gets hurt if you do that.
Right. Yeah. They need to function as a group, and I agree with you.
And so, and the offensive line is playing so well lately. I want them to continue to build on that. They played well against a tough Dolphins front. And so
especially if you're going to be playing your number one quarterback in Pat Mahomes.
Sure. Sure. You got to keep him upright. I'm so curious how this all is going to go. It's kind of a win-win situation, especially if Kelsey and Hunt and Hill are all out. If he even looks competent against a first-string defense without those three guys, that's a reason to get excited.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm just happy that Smith had a good game against the Dolphins, because if he had a bad game against the Dolphins and they still found a way to win – and then Mahomes comes in and tears it up, it would have been even worse.
Did Alex have a good game against the Dolphins?
Okay.
I know we don't have time for that. No, you know what? He had a decent game against the Dolphins. He missed a couple of throws that I really wish he would have hit. But that said, one of his best throws of the day, if not the best throw of the day, Albert Wilson went back to some of the things that used to bother us in the past.
Being Albert Wilson. Yeah,
the thing is, though, you know what? It's interesting how much more I can tolerate that when he's been playing as well as he has been lately, because you can tell that bothered him because he was gone. And that was – no.
Yeah, and I even said it at the time. It's the one thing you can't ask him to do.
Those deep shots. Now, to be fair, he made a great catch down the left sideline a couple weeks ago down the field. But consistently – and that's the difference, right, between all NFL players, and that's something that I've been trying to hammer on lately in the quarterback discussion as people are talking about Alex Smith. And so they're looking at his cumulative stats. And someone asked me, has the number one QB rating quarterback ever been traded the next offseason? I said, I don't think so. That sounds borderline unbelievable. But
folks.
Here's the reason. And I like Alex Smith. He has had by far his best year as a Chief. But snap by snap and game by game consistency, those are the big things. His highs have been way higher this year. And he's had a few games where he was great, legitimately great. But what separates great NFL players from guys who can put up great performances sometimes is consistency. And so Albert Wilson, he can occasionally, because he's an NFL player, and that makes him one of the best football players on the planet, he will occasionally make a great catch down the sideline. You just can't count on him to do it consistently. Alex Smith is a better version of that as a quarterback. You can't count on him to be great consistently. And you know, then people say, well, everyone has bad games. Absolutely true. But how often are those bad games? How often are those bad snaps? Because even in Alex's great games, except for two this year, the Redskins game and the Texans game, he was a freaking demigod in those games. It was ridiculous. I'm so glad I got to go to the Redskins game. And even the Redskins game, the first half was kind of rough.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun to watch in person.
Oh man, that game rocked. I forgot you guys were there too. That was such a great game. But it's that snap-by-snap consistency that separates. Because Tyreek Hill, he makes that sideline catch the majority of the time. And that's why looking at cumulative statistics don't tell the story on a player. Because Alex Smith's highs have been so high this year that his cumulative stats look great. And they do. Best year. Man, he deserved the Pro Bowl. I felt bad for him there. But overall, snap by snap and game by game, the consistency still isn't there.
Okay, since we've probably seen the last of him playing in a Chiefs uniform for the regular season, at least we think at this point, what do you think, if there's anything, that he would have to do to be back in Kansas City next year?
I think for Alex Smith to be back in Kansas City next year, and even then it is iffy, he would need to play like he played against the Texans every game in the playoffs, and the Chiefs would have to win the Super Bowl. And
so you think if they win the Super Bowl, he could be back?
No. I think if they win the Super Bowl and he is the biggest reason they won the Super Bowl, he could be back. But like even them winning the Super Bowl, I don't think means that much if he has games like, and again, he was fine against Miami. But even if it's a game like Miami where he was fine and they win the Super Bowl, I still don't see it because that snap-by-snap consistency. And again, what we've seen the last few weeks is the offense overall is succeeding. And again, this is no disrespect to Alex because he's playing well, but I do think that there are more than a couple quarterbacks that can make the throws that he's currently making and maybe not have the same happy feet issues, right? And post-snap reading.
And we know that you have one.
Yes, and that's the idea, right? That's the deal. No one has walked into, and we talked about this, no one's walked into a better situation than what Patty Mahomes is walking into. So if he fails, I mean, he wasn't going to succeed anywhere if he fails. And from everything I've heard, and I know Therese Paylor wrote this in his most recent mailbag, he said he thinks the Smith era is over unless Mahomes is just not ready. And he says, based on everything he's heard, that's not what's going on. I mean,
right.
Well, yeah. And
your starter.
Yeah.
And you're right. This is the best situation he could possibly walk into. And I would almost pose that it's possible with all the cuts that are probably going to happen in the offseason. It could get better.
It could. It absolutely could. Although I would just say I'm pretty content with the offense overall. Like with the way the Lions currently playing, whether you've got Morse there at center or Fulton there at center, I'm pretty content with this group heading into next year. I'm content with a wide receiver group that consists of Hill as your star and Conley and Wilson as role players.
I'm not sure Wilson will be back, but I understand why you would say that.
Right, yeah, and Wilson, it just depends, because if they make a playoff run and he is a role player in it, he'll be able to get probably more money than maybe he deserves elsewhere. Not deserves is the wrong word there. You get what I mean. I hope he gets as much money as humanly possible, because he's a grinder. I love the way he blocks.
Who is not there for his blocking, being that excited about what he's contributing to.
Absolutely. And I completely agree. And so it's interesting. Getting Kareem Hunt going again has been the biggest thing the Chiefs could possibly do these last 3 weeks. And it's giving teams so much more to think about down the stretch and so much more to think about going into the playoffs. I'm okay. And I can't believe I'm saying this with how horrible the offense looked in that bad stretch. But I'm going to be really honest here. That bad stretch didn't, in my opinion, have a lot to do with offensive talent. It had everything to do with Alex playing some of the worst football he's played since he's gotten here, and Andy Reid giving in to some of his worst tendencies, in my opinion, trying to cover up Alex playing bad football. And that's, you know, and then Nagy took over, and the rest is history. You know, at Andy Reid 2.0.
Okay, and I have to ask this just so we have a point of reference. Right now, the way it stands, not looking at what the playoffs are, what do you think Alex Smith can fetch in a trade?
Right now, not looking at the playoffs, I'd be stunned if you couldn't get at least a second rounder for him. He's coming off the best season of his career. And that's why it's interesting.
I don't disagree. I just was curious what you thought.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
Second rounder for $17 million. I mean, that's a steep price, but.
But he was a little cheaper when he came to the Chiefs, but he was only on a 1 year deal then too. But I mean, $17 million, you know, with the way the percentage of the cap works, it's not too much more than he was on the hook for. And the Chiefs traded two second rounders for him. He's coming off a better season, and this is also after 4 years of performing. Now, last year was kind of rough, but overall, he's done pretty well in Kansas City. And so if I'm Jacksonville, I'm saying, well, we could count on Blake Bortles, you know, having finally arrived, which, let's be real, that's not what's happening. That's just not what's happening. Or, but I mean, if you're one of them, I mean, you really could look at Alex Smith as like, you know, he might be a guy that could really get it done, especially, you know, often new age offensive coaches that see how successful Alex has been in this spread concept, in these spread concepts and RPOs and all that. They might say, yeah, this is my guy. He can run this offense and do it really well. Why waste a draft pick when you can get a guy who can do it really well? You know, especially, again, if you're ready to contend now. So I'd be surprised if they got less than a second rounder, and it wouldn't surprise me if they got better. It just depends on whether there's a bidding war. You know, that's what it really takes, right? You really want, like, the Jaguars and the Bills
and the Browns.
Yeah, and the Browns and the Broncos to all really go for it.
And we will talk about that in depth when it comes up. In the meantime, they prepare for this last game in Denver, division rival as they close out the season, and then they wait for their seeds, who they will play come playoff time. We will be back with you next week with all of that information, and we'll start digging into what they can do. I have a feeling it's going to be Tennessee. I don't know what you guys think.
I was thinking Baltimore, but I don't even remember how this weekend impacted that.
Not much to this point. I think it's going to come down to that last Sunday, and we will all find out.
Either way, I think the Chiefs are more than capable of stomping either of them. I really do.
All right, Seth, Pat Mahomes plays on Sunday against the Broncos. What are his final stats?
Oh, man, if he doesn't throw at least 7 touchdowns. No, I'm kidding. I'm guessing that he throws, for 250 plus, a couple touchdowns and a pick. But that's pure guesswork.
Well, that's it for us today, folks. We'll see if Seth is correct, and we will be back with you next week. Seth, thanks for being with us again,
thanks
as always.
Thanks guys.
And we will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.